So this is going to be the last three articles, the story of King Canantus, Alexander the Great, and then the story about Queen Boudica, who's a very interesting woman. All right, so the story of King Canantus, which of course is where we get the city of Cincinnati in Ohio. So there was a man named King Canantus who lived on a little farm not too far away from the city of Rome. He had once been rich and had held the highest office in the land, but in one way or another he had lost all his wealth. He was now so poor that he had to do all the work on his farm with his own hands. But in those days it was thought to be a noble thing to till the soil. King Canantus was so wise and just that everyone trusted him and asked his advice. And when anyone was in trouble and didn't know what to do, his neighbors would say, "Go and tell King Canantus, he'll help you." Now there lived among the mountains, not far away, a tribe of fierce, half-wild men who were at war with the Roman people. They persuaded another tribe of bold warriors to help them, and then marched toward the city, plundering and robbing as they came. They boasted that they would tear down the walls of Rome and burn the houses and kill all the men and make slaves of the women and children. At first, the Romans, who were very proud and brave, didn't think there was much danger. Every man in Rome was a soldier, and the army which went out to fight the robbers was the finest in the world. No one stayed at home with the women and children and boys, but the white-haired fathers, as they were called, who made the laws for the city, and a small company of men who guarded the walls. Everyone thought it would be an easy thing to drive the men of the mountains back to the place where they belonged. But one morning, five horsemen came riding down the road from the mountains. They rode with great speed, and both men and horses were covered with dust and blood. The watchman at the gate knew them and shouted to them as they galloped in, "Why did they ride in this way? What had happened to the Roman army?" They didn't answer him, but rode into the city and along the quiet streets, and everyone ran after them, eager to find out what was the matter. Rome was not a large city at that time, and soon they reached the marketplace where the white-haired fathers were sitting. Then they leaped from their horses and told their story. "Only yesterday," they said, "our army was marching through the narrow valley between two steep mountains. All at once, 1,000 savage men sprang out from among the rocks before us and above us. They had blocked up the way, and the pass was so narrow that we couldn't fight. We tried to come back, but they had blocked up the way on this side of us, too. The fierce men of the mountains were before us and behind us, and they were throwing rocks down upon us from above. We had been caught in a trap. Then 10 of us set spurs to our horses, and 5 of us forced our way through, but the other 5 fell before the spears of the mountain men. Oh, now, Roman fathers, send help to our army at once, or every man will be slain and our city will be taken." "What shall we do?" said the white-haired fathers. "Whom can we send but the guards and the boys? And who is wise enough to lead them and thus save Rome?" All shook their heads and were very grave, for it seemed as if there were no hope. Then one said, "Send for King Canantus. He'll help us." King Canantus was in the field plowing when the men who had been sent to him came in great haste. He stopped and greeted them kindly and waited for them to speak. "Put on your cloak, King Canantus," they said, "and hear the words of the Roman people." Then King Canantus wondered what they could mean. "Is all well with Rome?" he said. He called to his wife to bring him his cloak. She brought the cloak, and King Canantus wiped the dust from his hands and arms and threw it over his shoulders. Then the men told their errand. They told him how the army with all the noblest men of Rome had been entrapped in the mountain pass. They told him about the great danger the city was in. And then they said, "The people of Rome make you their ruler and the ruler of their city to do with everything as you please. The fathers bid you come at once and go out against our enemies, the fierce men of the mountains." King Canantus left his plow standing where it was and hurried to the city. When he passed through the streets and gave orders as to what should be done, some of the people were afraid, for they knew that he had all the power in Rome to do what he pleased. But he armed the guards and the boys and went out at their head to fight the fierce mountain people and free the Roman army from the trap into which it had fallen. A few days afterwards, there was great joy in Rome. There was good news from King Canantus. The men in the mountains had been beaten with great loss. They'd been driven back to their own place, and now the Roman army, with the boys and the guards, were coming home with banners flying and shouts of victory, and at their head rode King Canantus. He had saved Rome. King Canantus might have then made himself king, for his word was law, and no man dared to lift a finger against him. But before the people could thank him enough for what he had done, he gave back the power to the white-haired Roman fathers and went again to his little farm and his plow. He had been the ruler of Rome for 16 days. And this is based on a true story. It was around 458 BC. Romans were at war with the Aequi. After losing a few battles, the Aequi tricked and trapped the Romans. A few Roman horsemen managed to escape to Rome to warn the Senate of their army's plight. And Lucius Quintius Cincinnatus was plowing his field when he learned he had been appointed dictator. The Romans appointed him dictator for 6 months so he could defend the Romans against the Aequi, who had surrounded the Roman army, and the consul Minucius in the Alban Hills. Cincinnatus rose to the occasion, defeated the Aequi, gave up the title of dictator 16 days after it had been granted, and returned to his farm. The next article is about Alexander the Great, who is really more associated with Greece and Macedonia. However, he was a hero, a person that a lot of Roman generals looked up to. So his occupation, it was military commander and king of ancient Greece. He was born in Macedon in 356 BC. He died in 323 BC, so he wasn't very old when he died. And he's best known for conquering much of Asia and Europe. He was the king of Macedonia, ancient Greece, considered one of the greatest military commanders in history. He died at the young age of 32, having accomplished much in his short life. He reigned as king from 336 to 323. Alexander's father was King Philip II. Philip had built a strong and unified empire in ancient Greece, which Alexander inherited. Like most children in Athens, he was tutored as a child, learned mathematics, reading, writing, how to play the lyre. He also would have been instructed on how to fight, ride a horse, and hunt. When Alexander turned 13, his father, Philip II, wanted the best possible teacher for him. He hired the great philosopher Aristotle. In return for tutoring his son, Philip agreed to restore Aristotle's hometown, which included setting most of its citizens free from slavery. After securing the throne and getting all of Greece under his control, Alexander turned east to conquer more of the civilized world. He moved swiftly using his military genius to win battle after battle, conquering many peoples and rapidly expanding the Greek Empire. First, he moved through Asia Minor and what's today Turkey. He took over Syria, defeating the Persian army at Issus, laying siege to Tyre. Next, he conquered Egypt and established Alexandria, named after him, as the capital. After Egypt came Babylonia and Persia, including the city of Susa. Then he moved through Persia and began to prepare for a campaign in India. At this point, he had accumulated one of the largest empires in history. However, his soldiers were exhausted and ready to revolt. They wanted to return home to see their wives and children, so Alexander agreed and his army turned back. He had only made it back to Babylonia when he suddenly became sick and died. No one is sure what he died from, but many suspect poison. Upon his death, the great empire he built was divided up among his generals, and those group of generals were called the Diadochi. The Diadochi ended up fighting each other for many years as the empire fell apart. All right, so some fun facts about Alexander the Great. He was supposedly related to Hercules on his father's side and Achilles from his mother's side. When he was 16, his father left the country to do battle, leaving Alexander as the temporary ruler of Macedonia at the age of 16. He tamed a wild horse named Bucephalus when he was a kid. It was his main horse until it died of old age. He named a city in India after it. He never lost a single battle. Legend has it that the Temple of Artemis burnt down the day that Alexander was born because Artemis was busy attending the birth rather than paying attention to her own temple. And last but not least, Queen Boudica. By 61 AD or 61 CE, the Romans were in control of southern Britain. Then they faced their most serious problem to date, rebellion. It began when the Roman governor Paulinus was away in North Wales. He had led the Roman army, got rid of the Druids, the priests of the old Celtic religion. So the trouble started in East Anglia. The Iceni tribe lived there, and Prisuticus, the king, was a friend of the Romans. But when he died, he left half the kingdom to the Roman emperor, half to his wife, Queen Boudica. But the Romans wanted it all. They also wanted extra taxes, and they wanted Boudica to give up her throne. So how'd they get it wrong? They treated Boudica and her daughters very badly. They took land and farm animals away from the Iceni. The Iceni became very angry and decided to fight back. And warriors from other tribes came to join Boudica and her Iceni army. The Britons marched on Camulodunum, the capital of Roman Britain. Boudica's warriors attacked the ground, attacked the town. They burned the new Roman temple where the soldiers and their families had taken shelter. Then Boudica led her army towards Londinium, which of course is where we get London from. The Romans had made London an important town and port, and by now news of the rebellion had spread. And the governor, Paulinus, dashed back from Wales to London, but he didn't have enough soldiers to fight her. He left London, taking his soldiers with him. Many people fled the city. The Iceni burned London and killed hundreds of people, both Brits and Romans. So Boudica turned north to attack another Roman town, Verulaminium, also known as St. Albans. Paulinus was in the Midlands preparing for battle, and he called for more soldiers. Part of the Roman army was at Exeter, but its commander refused to come. So Paulinus did what he could. He mustered about 10,000 men. Boudica may have had 10 times more soldiers than the Romans, but the Romans were very well trained, and there was a great battle. The only reports of it come from Roman writers. We don't have it from the Britons' point of view. Tacitus said that most of the Britons were killed, and rather than be captured, Boudica drank poison to kill herself, and so the Romans had won. After Boudica's rebellion, people in southern Britain did settle down to live under Roman rule. Many Britons enjoyed living in Roman-style towns with baths and shops, and some spoke and wrote in Latin and wore the Roman fashions. But if you were to go to London, you're not going to see a statue of any of these Roman rulers. However, right on the side of the Thames, there is a statue of Boudica and her daughters in her war chariot. So you can tell who was the folk hero for the Brits.